Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also very happy to have back with us once again on the program Phil Nixon. He is the guy who for, long time, has been here on a fairly regular basis, certainly when things are warm, to try to help to deal with insect pest problems in the home and in the yard. And if you got some kind of bug issue, he's the guy that can help you get rid of it. What we need to know is if you can give us the best description of what it is, so we're sure what it is that we're talking about. But he can give you some guidance. And as I've said so many times, you know, sometimes the question is, can you live with this? But if the answer to the question is no, well, he will tell you what you need to do to get rid of it. So 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers to call. And if you have questions also and you would rather send an email, you can do that too. will-talk@illinois.edu. Thank you very much.
Glad to be
here. We already have a caller, so we'll just go right to the phones, and then I'm sure we can find some other things to talk about. The first caller is in Urbana. This is line number one. Hello.
Oh, good morning. I've been waiting for Phil to be on. I have a question that doesn't go away.
Okay.
Has an insect that's long, has many legs. I don't think it's a centipede, and it has long antennae. It comes up into my condo through the drains and through the air conditioner vents or the heating vents. I have tried spraying the drains with home defense. I have tried using borax. Nothing seems to stop these little boogers, and they're becoming a problem. That's the first question. The second are black spiders are also coming up. I've also sprayed in my crawl space and on the outside vents. Another problem might be that I'm in the middle of two other units. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I'd love to know, Phil, how I can get rid of these little things.
Are these fast moving?
Yes.
They're probably centipedes. We have ones that have in houses that have shorter legs, and then we also have a house centipede, which has very long legs, and they move about like greased lightning, very, very fast. The thing that both the centipedes and the spiders rely on or need a lot of is high humidity. And if you're running a humidity over 30% in your house, this may be a problem, or if your crawl space is that humid. So the answer may be there. The insecticides in drains would not make a whole lot of difference. They're not probably not coming up through the drains, but they're going down in the drains to get a drink of water. You got to realize that in our houses, if you can't turn on the faucet, we live in a desert. So they're going down the drains to get a drink of water, and then you see them coming out when they're disturbed. So that's probably it's if you've got drain traps that are working properly, they're not coming up through the drains. And if you didn't have drain traps working properly, you'd be complaining about all the sewer smell. So I'm sure they're not coming up through the drains. So where you would want to apply the insecticide would be along cracks and crevices, baseboard areas. But you might want to check your humidity. If you're seeing quite a number of them, my guess is that it's too humid in the crawl space and maybe too humid in your living quarters. And that you may in a crawl space you can vent a crawl space, which will help, or if it's sealed, make sure that you've got a vapor barrier and it's intact and some things of that nature to make sure that that the humidity is not high in the crawl space, because that can relate to some wood rot problems down the road. So I would approach it that direction since you've tried some insecticides and don't seem to work. Once it gets a little drier, I think the insecticide should do the job for you on both the spiders and the centipedes. Spiders are going to be, if you're seeing, these are ones that are just running around, not living in webs.
That's right. They seem to be running around.
Yeah. Yeah. Insecticide dusts are going to be most effective against running spiders.
Would you repeat that? Insecticide what?
Dust. D-U-S-T.
Oh, okay.
And they'll be hard to find in hardware stores and box stores and garden centers, but if you look around, you'll find an occasional insecticide dust, which is labeled for indoor use, that will have on it things such as spiders and centipedes and things of that nature on the label, and that's what you want to use.
Okay, very good.
And let me just ask you, do you have plastic down in your crawl space covering the dirt?
Yes, we do.
You do? Okay, because that's certain. That, if you didn't, that could be a real serious source of humidity and could cause a lot of other problems too.
Yeah, but also, but, you know, a lot of times those things initially are taped down around this foundation and that comes loose and then you start getting humidity buildup sometimes. So well, check that situation out.
How do I measure the humidity in my house?
Humidistat is inaccurate, but it's better than a wet finger. You can get a pretty good idea. You can buy they're called humidistats. They're essentially humidity gauges that you can buy in hardware stores and so on that will at least give you a rough approximation of humidity. You talk to a climatologist, they kind of cringe when they hear that word. But on the other side of a coin, at least you know that, you know, within 5-8% or something like that, I think, they're relatively accurate. They're not real good, but they're good enough to let you know whether you're running a humidity that's 50-70% or 20-30-40%. You want to be somewhere down around 30% ideally. You don't get nosebleeds till you get below 20% generally. So that's kind of what you're going to be wanting to look for, is something around 30-40%, probably somewhere in that range.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Right, very good. Hope that helps. Let's continue. We'll go talk next with someone in Rantoul, line number 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have 2 questions this morning. The first is about earwigs. I'm finding them everywhere in my spinach, my lettuce, my broccoli, my cauliflower. What do I do about them?
Yeah, I just noticed them yesterday for the first time. They're a little early this year. They usually don't show up till about the middle of June. In your vegetables, there's probably very little you can do except, just shake them out. They normally don't do a whole lot of damage there. You can dust with carbaryl soda 7 or spray with that material, but you're probably going to have on a green vegetable, you're probably going to have a 14-day waiting period, which means that it's not useful.
Okay.
You want to harvest before then.
Right.
So similarly, they will get in flowers and things of this nature. And generally, we recommend just putting up with the damage rather than worrying about it. And the problem is, of course, 7 is very toxic to honeybees,
right,
so, and other pollinators. So you want to be very careful about, you don't want to apply anything if you can avoid it into the blossoms of anything. So those are some of the concerns. Generally, a good rule of thumb, the way I've always looked at it is what I've seen is that typically when they get in, they're using the base of lettuce plants and cabbages and so on and so forth to hide more than anything else. They don't seem to do any serious damage there. It's just a matter of shaking them out when you harvest rather than worrying about spraying them.
Okay. And my second question is about my green beans. I'm not sure if this is a pest or a disease, but something is eating them. There are holes in the leaves, but the leaves are, they're turning brown and then curling at the leaf and curling at the tip or at the side of the leaf and then dying. Those leaves are dying. Is that a pest?
The holes in the leaves are probably, could be, depending on how soon you planted your beans, have they been up for 2 or 3 weeks, or are they just...
The first planting, yeah.
Okay, and this is, I assume, where you're seeing most of the damage?
Yeah.
Yeah. One little rule of thumb that we always go by here in corn and bean country is that you don't plant your beans until after the farmers plant their beans.
Okay.
And the reason is there's a pest out there called the bean leaf beetle, which overwinters as an adult and is very highly attracted to beans when they're coming up. And if you plant before the farmers plant, you will get the bean leaf beetles that were maybe covering 160 acres of beans down in your little spot of garden, and they will annihilate them. They'll do more than just holes, so you got a little lucky probably. You can control those insects with carbaryl soda 7, as I mentioned earlier, or other garden spray, vegetable garden type sprays. Most of them will work on them.
Will Safers work?
Safers will work if you hit them. The problem with this is that this is a nocturnal beetle, so you got to be out there at night.
Okay.
Safer's insecticidal soap is a contact insecticide, so it's got to be on. They got to be on the plant when you spray.
Okay.
And these things tend to feed at night, so no, it's not going to be very effective because the residue will be dry by the time they got onto it. The dieback that you're seeing, if they were out early enough that they got nipped by cold weather, that could be a factor. Beans are not tolerant of cooler temperatures, so that may be causing the dieback, particularly if it's the tips of the plants that tend to be that way.
I don't think so, that they weren't out that early.
Okay. Or the other thing is if you've been you may have been doing some overwatering, that may be also be a factor.
Yeah, and I don't think that either.
Okay,
but,
all right.
But I understand that they could be, but in this case, I don't think so.
In that case, I would contact your local extension office. It's probably a disease of some sort, and that's really outside of my area of expertise.
Sure. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, very good. Thank you. Our guest this morning, this hour of focus, is Phil Nixon. He's an extension specialist. He has his office in the Department of Crop Sciences. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it. There you go.
It only how long has it taken me?
That's all right.
And he is as a specialist in dealing with insect pest problems in the home, so it could be something inside the house or it could be something in the yard. No, we don't go to field crops, but we also can talk about ornamental insects that attack ornamental plants in the yard, and also if you have a vegetable garden.
Trees, shrubs, fruit, that
kind
of
stuff.
Thing,
yeah. So if you got some kind of bug problem, this is the day to call in, and Phil will help you out. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, I want to talk about the emerald ash borer. We probably have been talking about this now for, I don't know how long.
And will be for a while.
And will be for a while. And I guess that part of the news is that as expected, it's spreading.
Mm-hmm.
It's being seen now over more of the state of Illinois. So what can we say right now about just where you're going to find it?
Well, so far, the spread has seemed to be on avenues of trade. We're seeing them along Interstate 57, and they've progressively gone through Kankakee, Loda, Rantoul, Salem, and Effingham, all right along Interstate 57. Mm-hmm. Along Interstate 55, we've seen them associated with Shenoa and Bloomington. Along Interstate 80, we've seen them at La Salle and Peru, as well as closer in areas. The area of Chicago area is generally infested. It's more where aren't they than where they are up there. And then we've picked up another one that may be associated with rail traffic, which is on the northern edge of Decatur, right next to a railroad tracks and a rail yard. So that's between Rantoul and Decatur. That's the closest to our location, Champaign, but they are found throughout the state, and they seem to be moving more by people than by themselves, as the evidence suggests of their locations they're being found. So, but we're looking at them attacking and killing all ash trees, green ash, black ash, white ash, not mountain ash and not wafer ash. Those are not true ash trees. They're just got leaves similar to them, so they get called that. There are treatments annually of imidacloprid. This is sold to homeowners, and they can apply it as a soil drench within 2 feet of the trunk on an annual basis. You need to get rid of, pull away any type of dead organic debris or sod or anything, because the imidacloprid ties on dead organic matter and it's not available for the tree to be taken up. You would use it at the highest rate allowed, and this will provide good control. You can have an arborist or landscaper or other expert professional that could come in and do the treatment for you. They may do a soil injection, they may do a trunk injection. There is another material that is better than imidacloprid, but not tremendously so, called triage. It's spelled triage, and that's imimectin benzoate, and that's available by injection into the tree trunk by an arborist, has to have a pesticide license to do it, and that material will last 2 to 3 years with each application. So, bottom line kind of comes down to, if you've got a tree that's a couple feet in diameter on the trunk. You can, or 20 inches, you can treat the tree yourself for about $20 a year, or you can pay somebody else to treat it for about $50 a year, depending on how it goes about. Soil injections professionally are about $50 per tree of that size. Trunk injections can be up to 150, but if you get, or 100 to 150, so if you get 2 to 3 years on the triage, you're coming about that way. Or you can remove a tree and plant something else and not have to worry about it. The control level is high enough that that with application over a couple decades, maybe 3 decades, the other trees are likely to die out in the area, and you may not have, you can save your ash, but you are looking at a considerable investment over those number of years.
Well, that's, I guess, one of the things that I really wonder about is that, you know, suppose somebody has a pretty good size tree and somebody comes along and says, well, you know, we got this emerald ash borer problem, and I think maybe it'd be a good idea for you. Either you should cut it down, or they'd say, oh, you know, we got a real problem here, and you could lose that tree, and I got a treatment for you.
Right. And it's and where we're finding that homeowners are not understanding is that they're under the idea that, you know, you treat it once, maybe twice, and then you don't have to worry about it, and they look at that price tag, and, well, it's $50, $150, and I'll do it twice, maybe 3 times, and that beats the heck out of a large tree that may cost $1,500 to have removed. And also you've got all the shade in your yard and all that sort of thing. What they're not realizing is that you are looking at a very extended period of time, and you know, to be blunt about it, an ash tree in your yard, if you go to try to sell your house, is going to be somewhat similar to having an American elm tree in your yard several decades ago, where it would get Dutch elm disease and die, and an ash tree in your yard would be looked at as a detriment to the selling cost price of your house in all likelihood. So if you're looking at selling your house in about 10 years or something like this, chances are good they're going to an ash tree in your yard is going to degrade the value of your property. Usually trees increase it, but not if it's a problem sitting there.
Okay. We have several callers here, and we'd be happy to take questions. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And email will-talk@illinois.edu. We will go next to Lovington, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Morning. I just had a comment. You're talking about those beans, ladies' beans. I found spider mites on my dad's beans, and they were looking pretty darn cruddy. And I guess that's what I'm blaming their cruddiness on. And I had a question. What is a spider mite exactly? I know how to find them, but I don't know what they are. I know everything won't kill them.
Spider mite is a relative of spiders. They are 8-legged and so on, more related to spiders than they are to insects. But they're very small. When I say I'm a bug guy, so things that are large are a half an inch in my world. When I say tiny, I'm talking real small. Typically, you could probably put 120 or so on the head of a straight pin, and they'd still have plenty of room to move around. So it's at the level of being able to see them. They will spin fine silk between the leaflets and the stem, and you can see them crawling on that with your naked eye. Normally, we test for spider mites, and two-spotted spider mites is what gets on beans. They also get on trees and shrubs. And we normally check for those by holding a piece of white paper underneath whatever might have it on it, shaking it hard or hitting a branch of a tree pretty sharply. You'll knock some down on the paper. And if they're kind of greenish-gray and they streak green, they're eating green. So that's a problem. Generally, spider mites will, in particularly in vegetables, are going to build up associated with over-application of insecticides, because most insecticides kill the natural predators of the spider mites better than the spider mites themselves, and the spider mites will rebound faster. We tend to get them in commercial soybeans when we get a drought situation. Similarly, we tend to get them more on trees and shrubs when we're in a drought situation, and typically they're out in the hottest time of year, July and August, more than any other time. So because they have a naturally occurring fungus, which does better under cooler, damper conditions, and it essentially takes out the spider mites. Like I said, the only time I've seen spider mites be a problem on anything in the spring was somebody who was told that they needed to spray once every 2 weeks just to make sure everything was fine, and they ended up getting a spider mite problem because they killed off all the natural predators.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right, thank you. On to Champaign. And our next caller is here in Champaign. This is line number two. Hello.
Hello. I know you addressed this a year ago, but I didn't live in Champaign, so I didn't pay attention. What are those disgusting little black bugs? That they're very sporadic. They're not in every room, but I'll be sitting and reading, and all of a sudden they'll attack me. But not every day. They're little tiny things.
Okay. Do they fly, or I'm not?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Okay. They're little tiny things, and they'll just come out and like crawl on the page. So I'll smash them, but it's only like in one place or in two places, and it's not every day.
You're probably had to send the sample in, and we can identify it. There are clover mites that we've had some calls about, but they will squish red if you squish them.
No.
And they'll come in from the outside. But generally, as far as little black bugs that tend to be inside the house, I really don't know what you're talking about. And I've been doing this for 32 years.
Right. I'm probably just not describing it well.
Yeah, it's probably a case. Probably something that if I saw it, I'd know what it is. If you take samples to your local extension office, if they can't identify it, it eventually comes to me.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Thanks. I'm sure that there are any number of small flying insects that are small enough to get through a window screen.
Right, and could come in,
particularly if it's nighttime and you're in there and you have a light on.
They'll come to the light. Yeah. And that could be a possibility in this situation. And in that case, it's just a matter of it comes with being alive, essentially.
Okay.
Or if you can keep the door shut, would be a possibility. So yeah, you're right. If that's the case, then that's probably what may be happening.
Okay. Well, let's go on to Robinson, line four. Hello.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to suggest to Phil and the woman who called about earwigs, a practice we used in California when I lived there, that is to take something like corrugated cardboard or rolled up pieces of newspaper, lay them on the ground where the earwigs have troubled your plants, and then in the morning go out with a galvanized bucket with crumpled up newspaper in it and shake the cardboard or the rolled newspapers into the bucket and then set fire to the bucket's worth. Does that make any sense for Illinois?
It does, but it's a very labor-intensive situation. They will hide in cracks and crevices, and you can put out newspaper or rolled up corrugated cardboard or anything like that. Rather than putting it in and setting fire to them, I would use soapy water. That's a whole lot better way and a whole lot less dangerous.
Okay.
Generally, this involves doing it quite to anything that would be major in reducing the problem. Normally relies on the people involved having several children that they can coerce into doing this, because you're looking at it, to do anything serious, you're talking about 100, 200 of these things in your yard every night, and or maybe 500 or 600. Otherwise, you're spitting into the wind. I mean, you're doing something. You feel good about you killed some earwigs, but you're harvesting them. You're not controlling them, and that's. And so there becomes the brux of a concern. So, yeah, I know of the – I knew a college classmate that he grew up in Oregon, and, yeah, that was something that they did, and he had to do it every morning. But strangely enough, when he went to college, they quit doing it. You know, it's kind of like, I'm not going to go out and do that. We get the kid to do it, but I'm not going to. So, and as he said, he did it for probably 15 years, 10 years at least. And he said he never saw, he could always find gobs of earwigs. I mean, it never seemed to make a whole lot of difference, which I would suggest.
Okay, well,
I mean, it does work, but it's, you know, you're harvesting them. You're not really controlling them, in my opinion.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Well, here, let me do an email here. Someone is interested in knowing, first of all, whether you think roaches are any worse this year than in the past. And particularly, he's got a problem. Obviously, he's got them in his house. So he wants to know, what do you do?
Well, the roaches that we have in our houses are tropical. So the year to year doesn't make any difference because we keep the situation constant in our homes. What you would do is if you have a smaller roaches, typically the German roach is going to be around food areas, and they're going to be tan in color, about a half an inch long when fully grown, and they'll have a couple of black stripes behind their head. These are best handled with cockroach baits. There are a number on the market. Combat is one of the better ones that's out there. It's essentially using the same thing that professional pest control people use. If you have a larger roaches, the ones that are going to be reach an inch and a quarter or so in length, they're going to be associated with damp areas, and there are large cockroach baits that will be effective there. But effective, you know, in that situation is allied things you can do. So on the large roaches, reducing humidity in the basement or crawl space will greatly reduce the number that come into your living part of your house. And for the smaller roaches, making sure there's no food left out overnight, no dirty dishes, no pet food, and garbage is tied up into plastic bags or taken out by nightfall will help reduce the number of roaches. Caulking cracks and crevices also helps, particularly in food cabinets and so on where you don't want to bait. So these are factors. You see an occasional roach in your house, that's wood roaches, and they are affected. They are more numerous typically in damp springs, which I don't think we've had a particularly damp spring, but they will show in occasionally, and there you just remove them as you see them. So an occasional roach, which is up to an inch and a quarter long and flies, or one that is wingless and very dark colored, may be a wood roach. If you just see one every few weeks, just step on it. Don't worry about it. They're not going to reproduce in your house, but the ones that are main pests are originally from the Rift Valley of Africa and have spread throughout the world by people. And whether they're called German cockroaches, American cockroaches, Oriental cockroaches, whatever, they're all tropical from that part of the world. And outside weather makes really no difference to them because they're dependent on the tropical conditions that we provide to them inside our houses.
Okay. We'll take some more questions after a very short break. We're talking this morning with Phil Nixon. And if you have insect pest problems, you can give us a call.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309.
This is Focus. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here from Monday through Friday, 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics every week. In the second hour today, you'll be hearing a conversation that I recorded just a couple of weeks back with Cokie Roberts, well known as a correspondent for National Public Radio and also for ABC News. She was on the campus here in Urbana-Champaign to speak at the commencement ceremony. And before that, the day before that, we sat down and talked a little bit about her experiences in reporting, her being a child of a political family. It was just the day before Mother's Day, so we talked some about her mom, who was in Congress, and some about women in politics. And you can hear that interview. We'll not take calls, but you can hear that interview in the next part of the show. Then tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, we'll be talking about the problem of hearing loss. And some people argue this may be the most severely underdiagnosed and untreated medical problem we have in this country. One in six Americans suffer from hearing loss, and it's not necessarily related to age. We'll be talking with an expert in this area on the guest tomorrow. Melissa Rodriguez is her name. She's a hearing instrument expert. She has a business that's in Texas. It's called Hear on Earth Hearing Center, and we'll talk some about this particular issue and take your questions. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, and you can check the schedule, find out what we'll do in the days ahead by going to the website, which is will.illinois.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter at Will Public Media. In this hour of Focus, our guest is Phil Nixon. He's an extension specialist in the Department of Crop Sciences at the U of I for quite a long time. He's been here, certainly when it's warm and insects are really active, to try to help with insect pest problems in the home. So it can be in the home, can be in the yard, things that will attack your ornamental plants, trees, shrubs, the vegetables that you planted there. And in all of that, certainly fine. You can give us a call, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have some other callers. The two here that we have are both in Champaign. We'll go first to line one right here. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I thought it was sort of interesting that if you hit bugs, I can find out in terms of their color-coded. You said that if they were red. But occasionally, and not, I get these black ants into the kitchen, and they're like outliers, just one wandering along. So I don't know. They're not. How's that happen, or what's going on?
These are scouts that are from a colony that are looking for a source of food. And are they large ants over a quarter of an inch, or are they just smaller ants?
Let's see, quarter of an inch. Yeah, quarter of an inch.
Really. Diameter of a pencil. Quarter of an inch.
Yeah.
Chances are what you get, and that's what I would guess, is it's common to get an occasional carpenter ant. These are black ants that are larger, a quarter of an inch or more. And what they do is they commonly will come in, usually in the evening, looking around, looking for food. But what they commonly will feed on is the honeydew exuded from aphids and other sucking insects. And so they normally don't find the food that they're looking for inside our houses. If they were smaller ants, they topically commonly will feed on what we eat, and so then you see more ants. But scouts will come out from a colony, and they will wander around relatively aimlessly, and will get in, and an occasional ant inside the house is nothing to be concerned about. Carpenter ants can nest inside the wood of the house if it's gotten damp, but there you will typically see at least a dozen per day at some time during the year, particularly in the wintertime. So an occasional ant is not a real problem, and nothing to be really concerned about. If you you can do like I do and usually ignore them, or
kill them.
Or you can do like my mother. I never saw her move so fast as to get up and stomp a carpenter ant walking across the carpet. But they really are just. These are sterile females. They're not going to start a nest. They're just out wandering around looking for food. They're not looking to start a nest, and so they really are of no real importance.
Yeah, there was a couple other things. Actually, years ago I had them when I first bought the house. We're up near the top. They drill in, don't they, and put their nest.
They will get into damp wood, and they commonly get in around where there's a roof leak or a drainage problem around a windowsill or something like that.
Okay, the real one here is that I have a daughter that's in Greensboro, North Carolina. She's a first-year gardener, and she's into the organics and all that.
Uh-huh.
But what would be a good source in terms of a book or online or that you could keep up in terms of pest control, you know, the nicer way rather than these strong stuff, you know, like the soap and all that kind of stuff? Is there a good source for her?
Well, depending on the situation, well, one thing that you can do, and I'll make an unabashed plug here, we do put out a book here in through Extension called, let me see if I can get it right, Pest Management for the Home Landscape, and it costs $24.95, and it would be appropriate for many pests there. You'll look at it and say, oh, wow, there's all these terrible pesticides in here. But there, we list those, but we also list, particularly in the insect part and other areas too of the book, non-chemical methods that we feel are practical. There's always an organic method of controlling something. It may be kind of like the earwigs the gentleman was talking about. It may be so labor intensive that it's just not hardly worth it. So what we try to do is put recommendations in there that are practical. Of course, there are probably, I think I've seen a book called Home Gardening for the South somewhere on bookstores or when I've been in other parts of the country, and that looks pretty good. There's got to be their local North Carolina State University Extension Service will probably have some publications that would be appropriate, or there are other publications that you'll be able to find in bookstores, if she can find a bookstore anymore. They're getting scarce. but that she can browse through and find something that would be appropriate.
Okay, thanks for the tips.
Uh-huh. All right, very good, thank you. And we'll go again. The next caller, this is also Champaign, and this is line number 3.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, good morning. I have 2 questions. My first is about a long, slender roach kind of bug. And they've really been plentiful. I must have killed 6, 7, 8 of them in the last week. They crawl on walls as well as on the floor and can even be up in the ceiling. And if you kind of threaten them, they throw themselves down. And I wonder, A, what they are, and B, what I can do about them.
Do they have, like, pincher-like forceps on the back end?
I don't know what that means, sir.
Look like pinchers off on the back end of the insect?
Pinchers. Well, it's they're definitely...
because they sound like earwigs, which have been coming out fairly strong in the last few days, particularly. And they will commonly come indoors, and they're attracted... they will come out at night and hide in cracks and crevices in the daytime, and they're not a threat to reproduce inside. You can remove them as you see them, or you can use a an aerosol ant and roach spray along cracks and crevices, and that will help get rid of them.
That is they're identified by the fact that they are on ceilings and walls, and if
they're everywhere,
in any way are threatened. They'll just throw themselves down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, most insects, when they're bothered, many of them will just drop. And earwigs are typically about 5/8 of an inch long, reddish brown in color, and slender.
Oh no, these are black.
Okay, it's
totally
hard.
Black.
Okay, it's hard to say. Certainly, a ant and roach spray along cracks and crevices. Where the ceiling meets the wall, if there's a crack there, or at the baseboard area,
tell you the truth,
we'll keep
them
out.
I am just terrified of those sprays. Do these roach traps work, and if so, how do they work?
They work alongside baseboards to let you know what's there. They are not normally going to eliminate an insect. They harvest them. They don't really control them.
They harvest them.
Yes.
They get inside and can't get out?
Yeah, they get stuck, and they will get some of them. They are a very excellent tool of finding out what's there, but they're a particularly poor tool for control.
Is there any that also have poison as well as the sticky stuff?
Not to my knowledge, no.
So it's just...
There are bait stations that would have where the insects would go in and get poisoned, but they're going to be based on what the insect is, and you may want to get a sample and take it to your local extension office to find out what it is.
I have to touch it.
Well, or put a jar under it and bug it, and it will fall in the jar, and you put the lid on it.
Okay, so, but there are no baits that are poisonous.
There are baits that are poisonous. By definition, a bait is poisonous, yes.
But would they be in a box so that I didn't have to, you know?
You have to read the label, ma'am. If you read the label, you'll know whether there's an insecticide in it or not.
Okay. My second question is, I see in catalogs these things that you're supposed to be able to plug into your socket, and it's supposed to, thank God I've never had a...
Yeah, some of them are...
A rodent problem, but... where does it send the roach or the ant or whatever?
Does it
into your house or out of your house?
It doesn't. If you want to throw some money away, they're a great place to do it.
Really? They don't work
absolutely
at all.
Useless, yes. Huh. In fact, devices are not regulated by most state governments or the federal government, so these are... Every once in a while, they get nailed for mail fraud, but they're fraudulent. And and the state of Indiana requires a device to be shown that it is effective to be sold.
Mm-hmm.
They've never been able to sell them in Indiana. I guess that tells you something, doesn't it?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Even those things like Bell and Howell?
Oh, yeah.
Their name
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you'll see the same device with somebody else's name on it in about 6 months once the authorities catch up to them.
And that it doesn't work on rodents either?
It works marginally on rodents, particularly rats. Mice adapt to it, but it's mm-hmm. but it's not really all that effective on rats either, because they work on ultrasonic waves,
right,
which tend to be blocked easily by if the rodent gets in behind a wall or underground or anything mm-hmm. like that. And then they will learn to put up with them for the short periods of time that they have to be foraging. But with insects, they did some testing years ago and found out that they actually had them in a choice test in which the speaker of one of these devices was the floor of one side. And they found out the roaches like to sit on the speaker. Okay, so yeah. Like I said, if you're looking for a place to throw some money away, that's as good as any, but don't buy them with the idea that you're going to control anything.
Okay, so what I look for on the box is whether it is a bait.
Yeah, and it will say, if it has an insecticide associated with it,
mm-hmm.
it will have an active ingredient statement that is required by federal law to have that.
Okay.
If it doesn't have an ingredient statement on it, then it doesn't have an insecticide in it. It's just like when you go to buy over-the-counter medication.
Mm-hmm.
By law, it has to say what the active ingredient is. Okay? Same idea. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, very good.
Much.
Thank
You're
you.
You're welcome.
And we'll keep on going here. We just have about six, seven, 8 minutes left. We have a caller over in Belgium. We'll go right over there. Line four, hello.
Hello and good morning, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
I've been noticing more and more about an insect that I've spoke with Mr. Inge and Ms. Berenbaum more about, and it's a pesty little thing. It's a type of black fly called buffalo gnat,
uh-huh.
and they're getting more and more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting really obnoxious. And I don't know if everybody's affected by them just like I am, but they make a little slit and then they lap your blood or whatever it is.
Absolutely.
And some people swell up to them and some people don't.
That's correct.
I'm fortunately one of the people that swells up pretty good to them.
Okay.
And is there anything that can keep them away? I try DEET. It doesn't seem to bother them.
A lot of it depends on your chemistry, your own chemistry.
Oh.
And for many people, DEET works, and for some people, it does not. There have been some people that claim vanilla works, but for most people, it doesn't. Gardeners have a tendency, they can buy head nets, and they will wear those to avoid them.
Well, head nets, these things are so small, I think they can crawl through them.
No, they're made for them.
Oh, they have a special one for
them.
Yeah,
it's essentially a hood that goes over your face and your entire head.
Yeah.
And it's got real fine screening on it, and gardeners tend to use those. And then they wear garden gloves, no matter how hot it is, and long sleeves and long pants and so on. And because they cannot, unlike a mosquito, they cannot bite through clothing. So that protects you individually. But for most people, DEET works, but which is the repellent in Cutters or Off and other brands. But I agree. There, for some people, it doesn't. And really, it's a case of they're out for about 3 weeks, and you either protect yourself physically from them, or you spend a lot of time indoors,
or you suffer through it.
These have become more numerous because their larvae live in very clean water, and with the Clean Water Act and our changing attitudes as public that you don't throw junk in water, in streams and ponds and so on, our water is getting clean enough that we're getting these insects back that we used to have 100 years ago before we polluted the water.
Thank you very much, sir.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, now I have an email here that includes a photograph. This should help in the identification. Here's someone who says, here's got these brown bugs like that. Look like you know what that is?
Probably next to lights at night, I would guess.
Well, he says, I find them on my ceiling and upper walls in the bathroom, occasionally mm-hmm. elsewhere, but most of them have been on ceiling. They don't try to escape much when I smash them, but they fly occasionally in a fluttery way. They seem to be more common in the evening, but I have found them at day in rooms with lights on, too. Mm-hmm. Also says he has lives in an apartment next to a cornfield. You know what that is?
These are May beetles. And May beetles are, we'll describe it for the listening audience. They're going to be about an inch long, and they're going to be from anywhere from reddish brown to dark brown. And they're going to be very stocky, heavy-bodied beetles. And they come attract to lights at night. You will find them on your screens as you go outside. If you've got a porch light or something like that, and they will find their attracted light, they will come inside, and they will buzz around, make a loud sound. Their larvae are a white grub, which tends to feed not just on grasses, roots, but also will feed on dead organic matter. And so they come out of large areas. They're probably not really coming from a cornfield. It's just a matter that chances are this individual's outdoor lighting is probably the most the brightest around, and they're just flying to it. And really, they're just coming inside, and you just remove them as you see them.
Okay. Something we talked about earlier, I asked a question about the ash borer, and there's something that I had intended to ask I'd kind of like to come back to, and that was to go more with your observation that you said something like it's not so much that they're moving themselves, is that people are moving them. So the question is, what are people doing to facilitate the movement that then maybe you would then say, don't do that?
Firewood.
I was sure that was what it was.
Yes.
Because it's been one of the standard things people said, don't move firewood.
The idea is that you burn your firewood within 50 miles or within the county of where it was harvested, and don't be so darn cheap as to take your firewood when you go camping, and don't be so darn cheap as to not leave your excess firewood when you leave the campground. That comes down to it. And not only this insect, but there's a couple others that are in the United States already, plus close to 100 that are not inside the United States yet, and hopefully never will be, and they would all decimate our trees, and they're all moved by firewood. And they initially were moved by landscape plants, but that's a regulated industry. Firewood is not very well regulated, and it's difficult to control them. If you see firewood, when you go to buy firewood, look for a badge-like seal on the container that says it's been treated or been known to be free of insects. That's becoming more and more common. That's due to recent regulations to try to stop some of this movement.
All right. Well, if someone wanted to call real quick, we might get another question. Here's one that I'm not sure that this is an insect question. It's again, it's an email of someone who has a sycamore tree. Says, first, it looked like it was dying as the leaves hadn't grown. It did put out a second round of leaves, are now large and look healthy, but the bark of the tree has brown lesions that may indicate a pest infestation.
Sycamore trees are very susceptible to anthracnose. It's not an insect situation. Almost every sycamore tree in Illinois loses its leaves sometime during late April or early May and then has to put them back on. You'll see just a few leaves at the top. This is due to anthracnose. It will also get into the twigs and cause a lot of branch droppage, twigs up to a foot or so, 2 feet long. This is also due to anthracnose, and then the bark of a tree naturally exfoliates and flakes come off of it. And so that's probably what's related there. The dark brown areas might be something more.
And this is a fungal disease.
This is a fungal disease, right.
All right.
And it does better under damp conditions, cool conditions, which we have most springs.
We've certainly had a mild winter and had some unusually warm weather this spring, certainly above average temperatures this spring. Is that likely to affect the insect populations that we'll see as we now move into the summer?
Actually, a lot of it varies. Probably our dry spring that we've had has been more to cause fewer insects to die than would in a normal spring. Insects are very susceptible to fungal diseases, which are specific to insects, and they do better under damp conditions and cooler conditions. And so our warm, dry spring has reduced the amount of insects that will die. We've gradually been catching up to the early spring. We're only about 2 weeks ahead of schedule from what we would normally be now on insects. Trees are still considerably more ahead of that. But it is something that nature's kind of righting itself and over our early spring. And we are getting close to what it is. And you got to realize that when the bugs that bother us survive better, so do the bugs that bug them. There are predators and parasitic insects that will control a lot of those insects for us, and they do better under these same conditions as well. And so it tends to balance out in the end.
All right. Anything you want to say about Japanese beetles?
Well, they are out now in southern Illinois. We expect them to be in central Illinois within a week or two, and in the northern part of the state by latter part of June. And they are controlled by you can use imidacloprid in the soil to help control them, go up systemically, or you can hand pick them off. They'll drop off in the afternoon into a container of soapy water. And this will help reduce them. Controlling them early is best because they are attracted to other plants that have already been fed upon. Or you can use 7 or a pyrethroid insecticide spray every couple of weeks to control them. They're out for about 6 weeks.
Okay, real quick, we'll try to do here. Caller Downs, line one. Go ahead.
Hi. Sorry if you've already covered this. We did a new stoop last year. Replaced a concrete one. There were a ton of foundation ants under it. And now it's a brick stoop on sand, and I'm seeing sand come up on the sides, and I suspect it's ants, and I don't want them under there undermining my stoop. So what would you do for ants in that situation?
Well, ants are going to be present in a sandy soil anyway, so you are looking at probably treating them for the rest of your life.
That's fine. But usually I live with them, but
Individual nests can be treated with an insecticide. A pyrethroid works well in there. You'll find this as 8 insecticide spray.
Okay.
That can be just poured into the area, and that will eliminate it for about a month, and then you get another anthill back in that same area. So
okay.
You may want to look at making sure that your stoop, since it's new, is established well. You may be able to get some people at work with underneath already installed cement areas, where they may be able to replace some of that material underneath there with something that's not mined out as easily by ants.
Well, it's not. I mean, what's coming up at least isn't huge. It's just that I don't have to get anywhere.
Well, it's ideally if a stoop was installed professionally, it should not be too susceptible to this type of activity by the ants, and you should be able to live and let live.
We'll have to leave it at that with our thanks to Phil Nixon, Extension Specialist in Crop Sciences here at the U of I, for so many years of service coming by and helping with these problems. Thank you very much.
It's been 25.
Incredible. Thank you very much.